Welcome to KnowledgeCast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK, and today we're speaking with Katie Stone, Director of Knowledge Management at Barry Appleman and Leiden. Katie, thanks for being here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate it. It's always nice to meet a new person in the field and really appreciate you being willing to come on. Now, generally, if you have listened to the podcast, you know I start by asking what your definition of KM is. We'll get to that. But since we're recording on May 4th, instead, your first question is, what's your favorite Star Wars character and why?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm an 80s child, so it has to be Princess Leia.
Solid choice.
I mean, just iconic. The hair was everything.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. Yeah, definitely.
Very good. All right. Leader, all around, strategic thinker.
Absolutely.
Princess in general. Lots to like there. And the hair. All right. So let's get into it then. Your definition of KM, it's such a varied thing that we hear. And though there tend to be strings that are attached from guest to guest, I always love to start with that question. Would you share your definition, please?
Sure. Knowledge management is interweaving and creating a story of people, process, and technology. And I deliberately say people first because I think that you are so heavily in KM reliant upon the people. And although that is definitely going to be a paradigm shift here in our not so far future, right? But you have to rely on their implicit and explicit knowledge that they bring to the table in whatever industry your KM team represents. It's taking their processes, both from an internal perspective and also an external, and by that I mean client perspective, and then also incorporating the technology to make the people and the processes more efficient.
That's great. One thing I really like about that is a lot of times, especially a director of KM is very much inwardly focused. What is my company's knowledge? What are my people's expertise? You brought clients in right away. Can you speak a little bit to how your role and the definition of KM within Barry Appleman and Leiden really embraces that client knowledge and client need as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So henceforth, I'll refer to us as BAL, short for Barry Appleman and
Leiden. Thank you.
We are a, it'll make it easier, right? We are a corporate immigration law firm. We exceptionally provide filings, visa immigration filings for our clients, foreign nationals. And this is a big, big deal for them, right? If you think about it, we're moving people, we're moving human achievement across continents sometimes, right? And with that comes a totally different life for them, right? This is a totally new job. It's a totally different home. Their kids are going to go to a totally different school in a new country. And there's so many different people and life elements to what we do. I mention clients because we have to be able to make them feel at ease with the process. We have to let them know that they have, you know, the most successful immigration experts and attorneys working and representing them. Basically, in short, they have to know that we know what we're doing, right? We're not running around like chickens with our heads chopped off looking for different ways to strategize or best strategize their casework. We know it. We live it every day. And so it's important for knowledge management to be able to serve that information up to them. Let them know, be proactive on what's going to happen in the life cycle of their case, what's next, what we need for them, and ultimately how long everything is going to take. Like I said, it's a very high stakes game in immigration. So it's really important that we not only let our clients with a capital C, the HR mobility people that represent these foreign nationals in whatever new position or company they'll be working for, but also on the foreign national basis, the one who's actually going to be getting the visa.
Yeah, one missed filing and you go to the back of the line. That is indeed high stakes. You're hitting on something here that I want to pull out. I think a lot of times people get very excited about talking about what I call the KM benefits of KM, right? Oh, people are going to be able to find more stuff and reuse more stuff and connect with more people. And those are wonderful outcomes. But where KM really needs to go are the business outcomes. And you're hitting on a big business outcome, that being client satisfaction. And from client satisfaction, you get client retention. If you communicate well, if you demonstrate your expertise, if you serve your client flawlessly, then you're going to keep that client. They're going to be happy. They're going to recommend you to others. And so there is a direct line between good KM within an organization and happy clients that lead to more referrals that lead to more clients, right? So there's good ROI here. Talk to me a little bit about how your role connects to content, because I noted from your CV that you kind of grew up as a content manager and have a pretty heavy content-centric background. Am I right about that, Katie?
Yeah, that's right. When I first started in KM, it was very, how are we communicating to people, both internally and externally? Mm-hmm. The shift just in, 8 to 10 years away from such heavy copy or heavy text to infographics and images and telling a story is really a huge shift. And it's definitely a line of demarcation between, I would say, like an old and new school KM, right? You're definitely right in that. It's still content focused, but again, we are telling a story. We are using videos, we're using animation, we're using those infographics to do that now. So again, the content piece though is paramount, because at the end of the day, regardless of the different methods that you use to push out that information, it still has to be centralized, but flexible enough so that you can link to different areas if you need to. The enterprise search for that content is still going to be a critical component. And then the contextualization of the information. So it's one thing to be able to type in TN visa or immigration term, right? Let's say in our intranet library, but it's quite another to tell a story of how one obtains a TN visa, what the filing process is, right? Things that we know you're going to struggle with as an attorney while you're working on filing this case, as well as feedback from other legal teams who have done it, who have been there, and they want to provide some insight. So there's, again, a lot of contextualization there within the content too.
So in terms of search, what I'm hearing there is, it's relatively easy to return a link in search, and it's relatively easy to return a definition of a term or some discussion of a term. But to allow somebody to search on a term and then get, that definition, but also maybe a video to watch, a community of practice where they can connect with experts, a training class that they can take, basically providing, as you say, the context to allow them to choose what they really want to do, how they want to learn, how they want to act as a result. Am I getting that right for you?
Yes, definitely.
So how has, thank you, BAL addressed that? Has enterprise search been a big priority for y'all?
It has been. We recently completely re-optimized our intranet portal in such a way that it does contextualize. It tells a story. So whether you're looking for employment visas or longer stay residence types of visas, right, green cards and whatnot, it's categorized and the taxonomy is done and the tagging is done in such a way that if I have a question about a high level umbrella of, let's say, a certain petition type, like an H-1B, I can type that in and it does bring up all of the articles and the FAQs and all of that. But each one of those headers brings you back to the umbrella, which then has in picture form tiles cascading that story of the H-1B, right? However, if you want to know something in detail about that petition type, like what is the filing checklist for, you are also able to get more granular, type in filing checklist H1B, and it brings the actual checklist up. Of course, with all of the additional information articles, sort of subtext on the left-hand side. But I love that because you can get really high level with it or really zoom in and granular depending on what your need is. You may have someone that's a new paralegal, right, and needs to know everything about an H-1B. You may have a very well-seasoned attorney who knows what he or she is doing, but wants to know maybe how has BAL optimized the filing for the H-1B, right, during CAP season, and what are we doing about registration? And so in order for them to dial in on our best practice, because we do have a BAL way, right, we are looking at the most efficient way. We know from our data that we collect what is going to result or what is most likely to result in an approval rather than a denial. And we use those harmonized approaches because it also incorporates our tech efficiencies. So if we're including automation in our filing, then of course we have to do it in a way that either machine learning or our automation capabilities can understand. And so my team is also responsible for putting together all of those instructions for the automation bits.
Wow. Okay. A lot there. So first of all, I love the fact that you gave another example of context, the idea that a junior associate is going to have might use the exact same term to search on, but will need much different results than a senior partner would, somebody right. who's been with the organization for years and years.
Yes.
So that's a great example of what a mature search looks like, that it knows who's searching and it can make that inference based on the context of who the person is, where they're sitting in the organization, so on and so forth. Can you get into the platform, the kind of search tool that you procured, and then perhaps what your role was in that? Did KM lead that? Was it supporting it? Tell us about the whole process, because it sounds pretty in-depth.
Yeah. I mean, some things I can't say, but I can tell you that, you know, we went from your very traditional SharePoint site, which had, as I'm sure you know from all of your esteemed guests, many constraints, right? And it can be quite clunky and quite honestly difficult to maintain. So we worked with an outside vendor who unfortunately I can't name, but we worked with an outside vendor to streamline it and add those contextual bits that I mentioned before. So I think the big thing for us was, as a KM team, I'm really proud of us because we try and dig our heels into the unknown as much as possible. Yeah. I define my group as fearless because they're ready to take on so many different challenges that are not in their job description. But I think it's really what makes us a very successful group as well. And so, you know, a lot of them learned technology components from this vendor. They were willing to do the training and step into that. It was really important to them that they be the ones curating the content instead of sort of sourcing that out to the vendor. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a matter of trust, but it was a matter of, I know my legal teams and I know what they're going to be looking for. So I want to have my hands in the process of those tags and that taxonomy. So yeah, we did all of that and we helped design it, the new layout. My team also worked on sort of the data metrics and comparing. So we knew we were going to do a cutover to the renovation of the portal. And so yeah. A year prior, we had sent out surveys, qualitative and quantitative, to sort of measure the legal team's user experience with the site prior to the renovation. And then we did that afterwards. And we saw about an 80% increase in usability and wow. likability of the site. Yeah.
That's a great metric and good for you for doing the kind of the baseline capture of that. I think it's something that so many folks going through a KM transformation miss. If they don't get the baseline survey, who's happy, who's frustrated, what do people like and what don't they, it's a lot harder to claim success at the end or 6 months after something's been deployed. So that's a great tip for our listeners and very wise of you to have ensured that that existed. Well done.
Thank you.
You mentioned machine learning. So can you speak to us about how far you've gotten into that world? What are you doing? Is it part of the portal or is this still in the experimentation phase for you all?
So I think automation means a lot of different things to different people. Mm-hmm. I can talk a little bit about our automation. Some things are still in the secret lab, but...
Katie's being very coy for our listeners. She's building a robot in her basement, everybody.
I wish. No, that would be really cool. Some of our senior architects probably are, though.
Yeah.
So... I'm doing a low key brag, but we just won Fast Company's top 10 innovative service offering companies.
That's awesome.
Thank you. And
congratulations.
Thank you so much. And part of the reason there is because we consider innovation and technology at the very pinnacle of what we do. And it goes back mm-hmm. to my opening. I was talking about the definition of KM being people, process, and technology. And technology, yeah. again, you have to have it. You have to have it in the work that we do because there's so many different moving pieces of data, right? So we have a proprietary database called Cobalt, which has won a lot of awards, and we're very proud of it. And the technology in Cobalt allows for a few pieces of key automation. One is the database itself, which houses the foreign national's profile information, the employer's information, the particulars about the type of visa that they're applying for. And it allows our legal teams to interact in the database to get all of the information in terms of intake documents. The documents are scanned and automatically uploaded. So in terms of like passport, being able to read a passport, being able to read certain documents that we need from the foreign national, that has all been automated. It's kind of like a TurboTax situation where it's all kind of uploaded, and then the foreign national can just see what their next steps are and like if we have any outstanding documentation that's required from them. So it's a pretty cool system. The other piece of automation there is going to be our proprietary document reading and document, generation system. So it's called DocGen. And what it does is it allows my KM team to keep all of the USCIS, which is one of our main immigration government entities that stands for United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. When you are filing these US visas, right, you have to, this is changing a bit, but still the overwhelming majority, these are all paper filings, right? So you can imagine back in the day, your paralegals and your attorneys poring over like literal pieces of paper with pencils and pens and making notes and changing things and having to call the foreign national to get their birthday. What was that? Making sure when I'm filing this paperwork, it's for the actual foreign national I'm trying to do instead of somebody else, like getting names mixed up, PII all over the place. So what DocGen does is it allows us to automate the forms, and then the data on each of the form fields automatically populates from that proprietary database system, COBOLT, that I mentioned. So that's really cool. I mean, you can imagine the efficiencies there with, instead of having it be on a manual piece of paper, it's all done electronically. It allows for reduction in human error, right, which is huge. An increased safety net for handling personal information. Yeah, and just an overall efficiency. So those are the two big pieces of automation. We also have or are working on ways that we can streamline our case management. And so when you talk about triggering events throughout the life cycle of the case, these are very rote manual updates that our paralegals are doing currently, right? But the idea is to eliminate as many of those rote manual pieces as possible because it can be automated, and we are automating, you know, some of it. And again, I'll go back to people. We are a people-based enterprise. And so it's huge for us to take that time that like a paralegal would have spent dozens, hundreds of hours filling out the same data point over and over again, and taking that time to get on the phone with the foreign national. You know, how are you? How are your kids? How are you feeling about the transition? Here are our next steps. Do you have any questions? That time is much better spent with our clients making that connection rather than filling out paperwork, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's well said. And it's also, it goes back to the heart of knowledge management, right? A lot of people say, well, great. So you're going to make our people able to do things faster. Who cares? And Katie, you just gave one of the answers to that. Well, if they're not wasting their time filling in the same stupid form 50 times over, rife with errors and duplication, then they can better serve our customers. They can form more lasting connections. They can probably innovate in ways that they never would have been able to. So I like everything you just said. I want to go back to the systems, DocGen and COBOLT, because again, that is pretty innovative. I'm seeing or hearing, I believe that there's a fair bit of content assembly in there. There is some interesting connection between the two systems. Did BAL design and build these in-house?
We did. About 25 years ago, 20-ish years ago, I'm getting old. It was a paralegal who was, I believe, like a software or an engineer major in college. And he was working as a paralegal at this law firm. And there was this really archaic database system, and he hated it. And so he actually used his SQL skills and toyed around with it and created what is now COBOLT. It's kind of wild, but again, it kind of goes back to that innovative nature of the firm, which is like, have this growth mindset and you could do anything. It sounds wackadoo, but it's awesome.
No, that's right. I mean, in many other organizations, the paralegal would have been told, that's not your job.
Exactly.
Go do the thing that we told you to do. And it sounds like here they were, in fact, rewarded and supported for doing something different.
Absolutely.
That's great. Yeah. Where is that paralegal now? Do we know? Is there a giant bust of him in the lobby of BAL?
No, but I love that idea, and I'm going to steal it, and I'm going to pass that along to some of my partners.
All right. Good deal.
He's still with us. He is.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. He is the senior most tech lead. Yeah, along with our...
Sounds like well-earned, very cool.
Yeah.
So, Katie, if you can, tell me a little bit more about where KM sits within BAL, because I'm hearing that you've got a lot of fingers in technology. You are all over content curation and content strategy. Where organizationally does it sit? And then perhaps you can tell me a little bit more about the mandate of the KM office.
Yeah. Well, this has fluctuated over the years. Currently, we sit with what's called the practice management pillar. So we have more of an operations pillar and then a legal team pillar, if you will. And currently we sit under the legal team, which is a good fit because we rely so heavily, again, on the people, the folks on the ground doing the actual day-to-day work. We sit right next to our what we call practice support group. The practice support group is going to be the folks that manage all of our paralegals. So you have like the attorneys, and then you have the practice support managers and leads, and then you have the paralegals. So we're sort of right adjacent to them. And then we also, you know, I would say our sister groups are reporting and data analytics. We also sister department with the quality assurance team and operational excellence, as well as the training team. So
you basically hit ops, IT, and learning, and you're wedged in between those three. That's a pretty happy, sorry, in quality. That's a very happy and healthy place for KM to sit. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it really allows for us to create the best practice, cascade that to the training team, communicate that to the practice support group, who's going to be in charge of the implementation part, and then the quality and assurance team that kind of just like reinforces the cycle, if you will, of catching via audits and otherwise, but catching where people are not following protocol and the best practice approach. And yeah, the cycle just continues.
And now you would also refer to your team. Can you tell us how big is the KM group within BAL, and is it centralized, meaning these are full-time KM staff, or decentralized throughout the organization, part-time folks doing part-time work?
Yeah, so we at any given time have about 15 to 20 members of KM. Yeah. It is centralized. They are all full-time and they're categorized out into four different work streams. So we have our practice management work stream. They're in charge of the US best practices workflows. We also have a US content team that fuels that data, the proprietary database Cobalt I mentioned. They also work on things like questionnaire intake guides, SOPs, form guides, internal processing guides, client guides, things like that. Then we have a global group. So we have an alliance for our global work with Deloitte. And so we are responsible for global immigration content upwards of 200 countries. So we have a third work stream that just does global immigration content. And then the final work stream is going to be our global client information group. And they are responsible for specific client requests that we get for, let's say, matrices, right? Let's say we have a client that wants to send like 100 folks from India to a country in Europe, and they want to know what is the best possible country in Europe to send them to based on their qualifications and their particulars about what's necessary for the business move. So it's really cool. And then that group also is in charge of our external knowledge portal. So it's the immigration industry's first knowledge portal. It's called Advisor. And so in addition to supplanting all the information in our internal portal for our legal teams, we also manage and maintain the external facing client site as well, which is really exciting.
One of the things we see some of our clients struggling with is the flow of information, content, data, knowledge from the internal system to the external. In a way, defining what the appropriate publishing path is or workflow from one to the other is. What you want to try to avoid is basically similar versions of similar stuff having to be maintained in two different places.
Exactly.
Have you all cracked that nut? Have you figured out how to publish once and have the right stuff proliferate to these two rather unique places?
Yeah, I mean, I relate to that struggle. We are currently maintaining both. But the great component is that when you are curating content for the external audience, right, especially for what we do, is you can't include the legalese, right? You just can't because, first of all, it's not what they're Googling because they don't know it exists. And second, in many cases, and second, they want to talk to a person, or they want to at least feel like the information is coming from a person and not from a law book, right, or a regs book. So it's really important to us that the client-facing stuff, we're very careful about how we phrase things, and how we explain the immigration process to them. To your point, though, we are considering bringing in a new vendor that would connect some of that content for us so that with the click of a button, you can kind of pivot between internal writing and external writing. But I think what we're able to do from that external content is also post it to our public website. And so it kind of acts as, you know, a two for one for us, because you can hit the clients whom we work with, and you can hit any member of the public who wants to know about immigration. And that can, you know, increase revenue, obviously, because it's attractive to the general public. Again, trying just to do a Google search for how do I get an H-1B?
Yes, of course. Got it. So, Katie, let's actually pivot a little bit. That's all wonderful insight, and that's great. I'm sure our listeners at this point are saying, wow, this person knows a lot about a lot of things. So how did you get to be where you are? How did you get smart on the content side of things, the tech side of things, the overall learning and KM side? Tell us your story.
You make me sound so amazing. Thanks, Zach. I'm a very curious person, and I'm one of my biggest strengths on StrengthFinders is that I am an achiever and I'm a learner. So I like to constantly be learning new things, and I get bored very easily. I had studied political science in college, and after grad school, I had really thought that I would be on a campaign trail somewhere. And as I was sort of looking for my next move, perusing job opportunities, I did see an opening at BAL for knowledge management. And at that time, knowledge management was such a new and upcoming term, not even potential career move. I started reading up on it and researching, and found that it was a perfect mix of things that I was really good at, which is research, library science, taxonomy, all of those things, but also the unknown part of it, which was the tech part. And that really fascinated me. And then the fact that it was for an immigration law firm, I loved that. I had only kind of dabbled in some immigration research in grad school, but had never really did a deep dive into it. So that appealed to me. And when I got to the firm, it was such a cool, like relaxed vibe, but people are, they take the work extremely seriously, but they do not take themselves seriously, which really vibed with my personality. So it was a good fit. And then as I started working with the knowledge management professionals, it was just pouring over like hours of research. But then every year, technology became a bigger, bigger piece of it. And the story that we got to, I think, pitch to the firm, right, to the partners was, you guys have so much material, so much content. Your vision long-term is to automate processes, like I mentioned, that were repetitive and rote. How do we get there, right? So how do we get people at all the different offices being on the same page for dozens of different immigration processes? The first thing we have to do is we have to harmonize across offices. We have to make sure that I'm filing an H-1B in Dallas the same way I'm filing an H-1B in San Francisco, the same way I'm filing it in New York City, right? That's not to say that we don't operate from like a strategic innovation perspective. We're always looking at how can we make the process of filing more efficient. But it is to say that if the long-term vision is to automate those processes that are rote, you have to tell the bot how to do it, right? So you have to have a centralized spot where this is all being documented. So I say this to say that it started off as like, okay, we're KM, we manage the internet, right? But then it's like, no, KM is informing the training team. KM is informing the attorneys and the partners of this is the best practice approach. Well, okay, Katie, that's well and good, but what are you guys doing? Okay, so we are creating SOPs. We're creating an interactive guide to train people how to do this. And also to tell the tech team, who at that time was very new, right? They're creating Cobalt. So let's get KM and the tech team working side by side with the partners to help the tech people understand immigration, right? And build it from the ground up. This database that's not only proprietary, but it's being done with the people that are using it, right? So that part really appealed to me because it was building something new and done in such an intentional way that I knew it was going to be successful because we were bringing in so many different people, if that makes sense. And that's really where I knew this is what I want to spend years and years doing, because it's just really cool. It's what other job can you say, right? Like, I get to learn SQL code I get to learn, you know, hundreds of immigration processes. I get to see people happy to come in and do their filings because it's easy. It's not tedious, right? And to say that you also play a part external to client facing, if the client gets to log into something that we created, I created a chatbot. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's really cool. And they ask it a question and it gives them the answer in real time. So lots of cool components to it.
I completely love that enthusiasm and the perspective. I get to double down on it because as a consultant, we get to do all that weird stuff for totally different industries, right? So my story was back in my early 30s, I ran several different kind of KM type workshops around taxonomy design and a couple other things. 1 week for a nonprofit that focused on sex education, 1 week for a music publishing group, and 1 week for pharmaceutical. So I got to do the sex, drugs, and rock and roll of knowledge management all in 1 month.
I love it.
It's the beauty of consulting. So you have said something that is, I believe, implicit, but I want to pull it out because you talked a lot about the content centricity and the content role of KM. You've talked about the technology role of KM. You've mentioned processes. What I haven't heard a lot from you yet is that kind of the tacit knowledge capture and leveraging the knowledge of experts. But in how you have described what you've done, harmonizing processes, creating SOPs, surely there is a pretty significant role of finding the experts within BAL, interviewing them, workshopping with them, gathering their knowledge, and then translating that into this aligned vision, view, and direction. Can you speak to how you did that and how you figured out what the right way to do that at BAL was?
Yeah. So we do have attorneys and partners at the firm that specialize in either what we call immigrant visa filings or non-immigrant visa filings. The difference is, you know, to break it down, one is for work, one is for residence. And then breaking it down even further to different specific levels, they specialize in different petition types. We keep a running sort of inventory of who those experts are. And so definitely if we have a particular process that we're trying to optimize or make more efficient, or even quite frankly, do like an annual review of temperature read, is this the most optimized way? Or is there something else we could be doing to make it better? We would do that and we would bring those experts in. We also have a what we call best practices committee. And so the best practices committee consists of a mixture of partners, sometimes equity partners, paralegals, the practice support group I mentioned, so the folks that supervise the paralegals. Sometimes we'll roll on members of like the training team or members of the quality assurance team. And that's, like I said, it's a rolling committee membership. And we try to switch things up every year to give everyone a roll on, roll off experience. It really is helpful in two ways, not just to your point of making sure that we have the right people in the room to make the sort of best practices decision, but also to pull back the curtain, if you will, and see how the sausage is made.
Because
I think oftentimes KM can be quite overlooked. And I think it definitely depends on the industry and the organization. But when people have an opportunity to serve on these types of committees or boards, it really gives them a chance to see how much work is involved in A, harmonizing, making content or process decisions, the change management that surrounds that and rolling it out and to, you know, actuate any change involved. And then also how you serve up the information. So whether that's like an intranet or an external portal, whether that's in a library, whether that's on a Teams channel, there's a lot of decisions that go into all of those steps. And so for them to see how many pies we have our fingers in and the numerous decisions that have to get made, I think it gives them a lot of insight into the value of KM also.
It's a lot of pie. And you note something very astute. I think a lot of organizations just don't really get KM, right? And there are people in organizations that just expect, well, to continue the metaphor, just expect the pie to show up and don't think about what it took to get it there. And your role, one of your roles as director of KM, is to market the value of knowledge management, to ensure that the senior partners and decision makers and people putting budget in place understand how critical it is. And it sounds like you've done that in a way that is really constructive for the organization and really natural. So very important and clever. And again, I think a real note for our listeners to hear that, hey, if you're in charge of KM, you got to make sure that everybody gets what is so important about your job. Well said. How about a little advice for those listening who are looking to grow up in the field, that are looking to learn what you've learned or develop the set of skills, but aren't in the nurturing environment of BAL where they're going to be given those opportunities? Where do you direct somebody who wants to figure it out?
I would say it's really important to network. It's really important to go to conferences. It's really important to become a speaker. All of those things are going to force you to talk about KM in a way that you may not be in your first year or two in a KM role, right? You're challenging yourself to talk about it not only with internally with your colleagues at your organization, but also getting insight and sharing your knowledge that you may not realize you have, but you have it now with right. others in KM in different companies or organizations. So I would say KM World, I know you're a big fan. I am too. I love it. I've spoken a couple times, and definitely subscribe to the magazine that they have, LinkedIn. You just really dive in to knowledge management and familiarize yourself and educate yourself about it. A lot of what I learned has been KM from other industries. Healthcare, yeah. right, is huge. Tech. And it's just incredible the amount of information that you can find on that and how willing my KM colleagues and other companies have been to share with me. So I would say that. Yeah. I would say figure out your 2-minute elevator speech on what knowledge management means to you or how you define it, similar to what you do on this podcast. Because I think in general, most people have no idea what it is. And it's really difficult to define. And that's part yeah. of why I love this podcast is you get to hear about how people define it in their own words. But I think like, unless you do that, you're going to have stakeholders at your organization massively confused and possibly conflating what you do in KM with maybe what they're doing on the data and analytics side or what they're mm-hmm. doing in marketing. And you really want to have a clear definition of what your team does and the value add you bring to the organization. The last thing I would say is document, document, document. Document everything that your knowledge management team is doing. Make sure that you have the metrics to support, let's say, your budget, right? Make sure that you have the metrics to support the efficiencies you are creating, whether that be internally or externally. And I think teaming with all of the other ops department is critical also. And it's really important that you show, at least to me, the organization, that you are willing to collaborate with everyone else in your organization to make the change management that your team will inevitably create for them. Yeah. So it's almost like, okay, well, you're the one saying we have to do it this way and the content is there, but you really need to be a part of the push out information piece of it as well, I think.
So I summarize that as saying must play well with others.
Right, and exactly.
Katie, what both of your last two points describe that very thing. I think one of the reasons KM is so hard in an organization is because it really needs to touch everybody. Right? You got to work with the IT folks. You got to work with learning. You got to work with the content team. You got to work with everybody in ops. You got to work with the executive stakeholders to make sure they keep funding your stuff. You got to work with the new joiners to understand what they're struggling with. I mean, it's everybody. Yeah. And then you layer on top of that this sense that you also need to lead by example. You need to demonstrate your willingness to put that content out there, to share your knowledge. It's hard to do what we do. And I think you summarize that in a very positive, but also very clear way. And I appreciate that. What are you most excited about right now? Like, what's getting you out of bed in the morning, either specific to BAL or in the field in general? What excites you?
I'm very excited about the forthcoming automation that we are going to be unveiling very soon. I think both from the internal legal team's perspective of think about like your most ideal database and case management system. And with MiraClix, you know, you're able to work through your case. I think it's really exciting that we're going to be reducing lots of potential human error, and we are going to be maximizing, you know, the number of filings that we can do. So it's really exciting to know that that's on the forefront and on the horizon.
Yeah.
I think also from an external perspective, our advisor site, we have, you know, 50,000 and growing users right now on that external client immigration knowledge portal. We have Ellie, named after Ellis Island for obvious reasons. And she's our chat bot that we have up and running. And so that's been so exciting to watch people interact with her and for them to get their answers, their immigration answers in real time. I'm so very excited about the future of Advisor and how we're able to serve up our clients with so many different pieces of content and styles. So what I mean by that is, you know, the animation that we have. We have a podcast that we just released this year that our government strategies teams host. And so that we have something called community, which is more of a grassroots, almost like think of like the old school, like community boards on the internet where you would post things. So it kind of does a little bit of crowdsourcing, but also they get sort of a VIP invitation to our government webinars that we do. So the interaction piece on the client side is very exciting. And then internally, I had mentioned before that vendor that's going to help us connect different pieces of information. So if we have something that's available on our intranet portal, we can immediately tag it and then it gets like connected to our Microsoft Teams channel for that. So if they want to do some crowdsourcing with the latest information, they can, and we'll be privy as KM. So we'll get to vet it and then work it into our best practice because, okay, it's not just a rumor, right? We know that it works and it's making said process more efficient. So we're going to go ahead and work that in and implement it. So
I love that. Did you come up with that? Because that's something we've seen really work. The idea of social knowledge and conversation, getting in a way upvoted, then vetted, then blessed, then published is a really great way of generating new knowledge, of doing knowledge transfer and inspiring people to share their knowledge. If that was you, well done. That's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, it started off as a problem to solve because, right, you have all these Teams channels and people may be hoarding information in a silo, but they also could possibly be spreading something that's not quite true and vetted. And so especially with immigration, you want to make sure that people are doing things in a very specific way and you can't let a rumor go. But hey, maybe it's a strategy decision and it works and it's leading to more approvals. And yeah, we would definitely vet that through the KM channels and then we would bring it to the best practices committee that I mentioned. And then boom, it's done. And not only do you get to give credit where credit is due, right, to the legal team that actually came up with that particular process change that's more efficient, it encourages people to give you more of that feedback, which is really important.
Well, you hit on a key point there. And I was speaking with this idea to a CEO of this global company who's very risk averse. And he said, well, no, we don't want to give everybody a forum for this. What if they say something wrong or say something adverse to our approach? And my response was, well, great, because you'll see it and you'll be able to address it and fix it. That stuff is going to happen no matter what. The beauty of a public forum like this is that you actually get to act on it and make it better. And so if you look at it, I believe that communities of practice, threaded discussions, old Reddit-ish type of boards, one of their greatest powers is actually to correct wrong information, not just generate new cool information.
Exactly. And I think that's been particularly useful for our client advisor site, right? Because part of the appeal there from our clients is that we, as their trusted immigration service provider, kind of get to shape the narrative for their clients, right? In the way that they're not Googling what's the quickest way to get an H-1B, right? It is there for them, served up, prettily packaged in a way that their employer supports and BAL supports. So they're hearing a consistent message, not only from their legal teams, but from that portal that I mentioned, right? And so it allows us to shape that narrative, if you will, in a way that we are assured they are not getting wrong information from us. And again, we're constantly checking that with checks and balances from the communities that you mentioned, such as Teams.
That's a big deal, Katie. I love that. We'll close with this, and it's a gross generalization, but it's a fun question to ask, so forgive me. What's the one thing? What's the one thing an organization must do to be successful at KM? Or two? I don't know. Gosh. Three? Give me three.
Listen to your people, because they are going to tell you what's working, what's not working, and communicate. I know that's so simplified and dumbed down, but I think a big part of KM is you cannot just document and dictate, but you have to be able to affect change and not be like a mandate, but rather be a conversation. And mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of organizations struggle with is we have this data, we have this information. I'm going to steal, I don't remember who said this, but I believe it was one of the opening speakers at KM World last year, maybe. But if data is your ingredient and information is your meal, then KM is your nutritionist because they're going to guide you on the efficiencies and help you reduce waste, right? And all of that is based on a lot of information and data that's coming in. You have to be able to explain that to your organization in a way that is easily digestible to keep in line with the metaphor. But yeah.
You're talking to a guy who had potato chips for lunch last night.
Yeah, you have to be able to explain to people why they need it and how they're going to use it. So that's key.
Excellent. I think that's great. And it's a wonderful point to close on because it's pretty clear from this conversation. It's how you've operated in your role and how you've been so successful. Too many people say, hey, we've got a communication plan and it's all us talking to them. It's one way. But it sounds like you've really fostered a culture of two-way communications. You led with listening, and that is really, really powerful in our frame of reference.
Yeah, I think it instills a lot of trust with the members of your organization to know that they feel heard and that be careful what you wish for, right? Because with all of those other ops departments, they know that if they want to change something, KM is going to need to be involved. So they come to us a lot of times proactively without us having to meet with them. And the same with the legal teams, right? Is they know because we've taken years of this listening and change management approach with them that they can come to us and find anything they need regarding information on immigration law and vice versa, that we will come to them to corroborate things. So yeah, it's a two-way street for sure.
What a great indicator of success that you've built that where somebody says, we got to get Katie in the room. We got to get KM in the room. That's fantastic.
Definitely my team. Yeah, my team's amazing.
Love it. Well, very good. Katie Stone, Director of KM at BAL. Thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners, thanks for joining this episode of KnowledgeCast. To check out more, please visit our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. Have a good day, y'all.